is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Good day and welcome to Boarding Pass 103, operating on November 15th. This is Drew and I'm here with my fellow industry insider Doug. We're two av geeks creating a network for airline, airplane, airport, and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. Doug, we have our first post-episode 100 guest.
We do, Drew. We had Laura, an AvGeek flight attendant from Phoenix, on Boarding Pass 98. Now we have another flight attendant, AvGeek, from the other side of the world. Roxy works for a large airline based in Dubai and is a social media celebrity. You may know her from Instagram or Twitter as RoxAvGeek or her blog at RoxAvGeek.com. Welcome, Roxy. We're excited to have you on.
I'm really excited that you guys choose me to be part of this. Just a quick note on that. I'm not a celebrity. Thank you. That's still, I'm just a girl that loves airplane. It's a pleasure for me to finally meet you guys and get the chance to do some aviation talk, because that doesn't happen very often, you know, like in my community of girls, especially. So I'm always keen on talking about planes with everybody.
Yeah, we're always looking for more women to come on the show. And we've actually had a lot, Doug. We've had more than I can count now. There's a lot of women av geek. Roxy just got back. I can't believe you. Hopefully you had enough sleep because you just got back from a trip. And you just got back from an event, which we're going to save for just a moment. Where did you come back from?
Well, I literally just came back this morning, I think, or this night. You know what? You just forget the day morning. Yeah. For you guys, it's morning. For me, it's nighttime now. It happens in aviation. I just came back from Barcelona.
Oh, wow.
But previously to that, I came back from LA. It's been a roller coaster. I actually came, and if you go really back, I had Sao Paulo. I had Houston. And also the very long cargo trip that took me to Amsterdam and all over the place. So my brain is a bit like question marks everywhere. But
we feel so bad for you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. To go to Sao Paulo, LA, Barcelona. But anyway, Roxana, we know that you work in Dubai, but like 89% of the people that live in Dubai, you may not be a local. How did you get there?
It's actually quite of a funny story. Probably some people pick up on my accent. I lived in UK for 2 years. I worked there and I actually joined the airline from UK. I just went to an interview in Birmingham. And the fact that I actually went to UK brought me to Dubai because there were a lot of interviews going on in the UK. Hmm. That's how I got to practice on my hospitality skills also. And my English, especially the English side of the language barriers. The 2 years in UK, and then that's pretty much it. I didn't really do anything else. I was just lucky enough to get accepted.
Where is your accent from, though?
You know what? I'm going to ask you guys to tell me where is the accent from, because I'm curious. What do you think my accent, like, how is it?
Your accent is probably like mine. I was born in Sri Lanka. My parents still have a little bit of an accent. So where does my accent come from? It's probably all over the world.
Yeah.
I would say all over the world. I mean, when I listen to you, I would say European. I would say maybe Italian, maybe. Yeah.
I hear a little Brazilian in there too, I feel like.
Maybe because I had Sao Paulo.
Maybe that's why. Yeah, that's in my mind.
I don't know if it applies the same of both of you guys. I have this thing. I don't want to call it a condition. It's not a condition, but like everywhere I travel, I seem to adjust to the accent. Like if I speak up, when I came back from LA, I had like American accent. I came back from and now I just came back from Spain and I might have a little bit of Spanish accent. So
That's like when I go to Sri Lanka and I try speaking in Sinhalese, it's so hard for me because I have like a third grade level and they're like, it's too much of an American accent. Just talk in English.
I'm trying. Yeah, that's funny. All right. So where is it from?
Romanian.
Okay.
It's a Romanian accent combined with watching cartoons in American and then living in UK.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny you say that because I know, or I've heard of a lot of people who learn different languages just based on watching TV and watching shows.
Funny enough, that's how I speak Spanish because I was watching this telenovela.
Okay.
This soap opera.
Oh yeah. My wife loves those.
You just got back from Barcelona and you have a little bit of a Latin.
I do because I think I was there 48 hours, so I had to. same thing with the population.
Well, speaking of travel and different cultures, we saw in your profile that you're a big fan of ancient Rome. You have a degree in law and a master's in forensics and criminology. That is such a crazy background. Tell us about how aviation entered the picture. I know you mentioned how you did the interview when you were in the UK. Someone with your background, how do you end up in aviation?
That's a bit of a funny story. So I loved aviation all my life. Ever since I was a little girl, I was watching, because the city that I grew up in, Romania, is quite small. We don't have an airport. I used to watch the contrails of the aircraft. Just, I'm like, oh my God, what are these things? I want to see them up close. And I got this passion for aviation since I was old. But then I like justice in the world, you know, like I'm like a Wonder Woman sort of a figure. I want to make justice and whatever. So I'm going to be a judge. I'm going to be prosecuted or whatever. I got to that. I finished my degree. And then when I finished law, I realized, okay, the world is kind of corrupt and I'm no Wonder Woman. So I did criminology and forensics in order to become an air crash investigator. That didn't work out very well because I don't want planes to crash. And I'm like, you know what I mean? So then I changed. I want to fix the aircraft. And that's when I got my mindset that I want to become an engineer. That had a really funny turn of events. I went to UK with that purpose. And I met someone and it just went to from, oh, I'm focused on my career. I'm like, you know what? Marriage sounds good now. But then... But then that didn't work out and I'm back to my engineering purpose. So
a lot of us start, this is so interesting because a lot of us start our aviation journey.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's since I was 5 years old, as I saw planes taking off at SFO at SFO, I was in love and that was it. And I think Doug, it was similar for you.
Mm-hmm.
But then for you, Roxy, and for a lot of people we know, it was a winding road towards aviation.
It was quite a long trip because, in fact, it's you would not believe this. Probably going to find it a bit weird considering how much of an aviation fan I am. My first ever flight, like ever in my entire life, was in, are you ready for this? Was in 2012.
Whoa. Wow.
I know. I was waiting all my, I've seen airplanes, but I've never been inside one until 2012. Because it was a crazy journey.
And now you're playing catch up.
Oh, yeah. Like crazy. Listen, I've been trying the past years that I probably, like, I did all my catching up that I lost all those years.
Yeah. So. Drew, this is awesome. I think that this is great for the listeners, though, because we talk about it's never too late to get into a career in aviation. And Roxy's story shows that she can get a master's in criminology and then end up in the aviation industry.
Yeah.
All of the listeners out there, it's never too late.
It's never too late. And
I'm sorry, guys. Can I just add a few things?
Yes.
Actually, yeah. I always mention this to my followers as well, because I get questions about, oh, is it too late for me? I'm 26, I'm 27, you know, etc. And I always tell people, regardless of what background you have, okay, I understand, because I spent 6 years in university and people's like, oh, what a waste. No, it's not a waste, because what matters in the end is you do what you feel that you love doing. And I was passionate about aviation, but I choose that direction because I thought that's what I wanted to do. And then I actually joined the airline when I was 26, and it wasn't too late. Yeah, people join when they're 21, but it's never too late. As long as, even if you're 30, or doesn't matter, as long as you do what you love. I always tell people, never stop trying, you know, never stop, regardless of what background you have, just go for it. And I want the listeners to go for it. Like, regardless, stop thinking about your age, stop thinking about your background. It doesn't matter. The bottom line is, if you're passionate about what you do, you will get it, because you're going to be amazing at it because you're passionate.
I can't say it better than that. If you're passionate about it, you're going to be great at it, right? Just do it.
Yeah.
I guess all runways lead to aviation for us av geeks somehow, right? Let's talk about how everyone's week. Roxy, we're going to save you for last because you probably have the most exciting week. We'll start with mine because I have the most boring week. So all we're doing, my main focus right now is winter ops planning, because we're going to have snow before we know it. And it's beautiful outside. It's sunny. And I think people are lulled in this sense of, oh, let's just enjoy this time. No, this is the time to prepare. So anyone on the U.S. East Coast, be prepared.
Get ready.
Get ready. Because I found the more prepared I am with numbers of trucks, what we're going to do for the DI stands, the less things will happen if I have everything in place. Doug, you got paid to go to Hawaii?
I did. And it's funny, Drew, because we recorded on Wednesday last week and I was talking about that Maui trip that just magically disappeared. Well, I got a call on Wednesday night asking if I could do a Denver turn on Thursday. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And when they tried to plug my name in the system, they said another pilot had already snagged it. A little bit disappointed, but fine, whatever. Well, I'm glad that I didn't get that trip because about an hour later, they called and asked if I could do a 5 o'clock showtime in San Francisco Thursday morning for a Maui overnight. So I did. And like literally less than 24 hours after we recorded, I was sitting on the beach with a beer in Maui.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, no, I'm so sad for you. I feel really bad.
Yeah, well, I'm about to feel really bad for you when we talk about all of your all of your stuff over the last week.
Doug texts me. It's like 9 o'clock at night here. And he says, hey, I got to fly to Maui. I got to go to bed right now. See ya. I'm like, okay. Yeah. You have to go to sleep right then to get at least.
You know what? Hawaii is actually my dream destinations. I've always wanted to go to Hawaii.
Okay, well, that's good. At least I feel good that I've been somewhere that you have not because of all these cities that we're going to talk about.
Roxy, how was your week?
It's been a hectic week because what happens is in the company, there's not many crew that have U.S. visa. And I've been having, like, I just literally had, I think, around 5 or 6 U.S. flights in 2 months. And it doesn't normally happen. It doesn't normally happen because the U.S. flights are over 14, 15 hours. So you shouldn't do so many long trips. But last week I told you, it's like all I remember, it was I was in L.A. doing some plane spotting, of course, you know, the In-N-Out, famous In-N-Out burger. And next thing you know, I take a quick nap. I blink and I'm like in Barcelona and I'm like, why is everybody speaking Spanish? And then it's different crew. I'm like, wait, where's this guy from last week? I'm in Barcelona. Because you guys can, you know, relate to this. Like your brain is like, oh, what? I'm pretty sure some, like you both woke up at some point saying, where am I again? You know, like you get this, it's a bit of a brain pause thing. And then it's like, oh, wait, I'm actually a flight attendant.
I'm not lucky enough to experience that because my trips are planned. So I know exactly where I am and exactly what I'm going to do. But Doug, you probably have that from the military.
I do. From the military and also now flying for the airline where I wake up in the middle of the night and I have to go to the bathroom and I walk into a wall because in my mind, I am remembering the previous hotel room that I was in where I turned left to go to the bathroom and this one I turned right, or I wake up and I don't even remember what day it is. Like that happened. Oh, that happened this morning. I woke up. I thought
I don't work on days. I work on we work on trips. Like, you know, like for me, it's like, oh, day of the week. Don't ask me day of the week. Cause I don't know.
Roxy, one more question before we get to your favorite aviation moment. We had Lara on the show. She's a flight attendant. She said she doesn't
I listened to the podcast like earlier. Oh, you did. Very nice.
Yeah, she was great. She says she doesn't think about the where her body clock is. She just adapts to wherever she is and she doesn't think about what her body clock time is. Is that what you do?
Her and I have one thing in common and that's it. So it really depends. So in our airline we have layovers sometimes at 24 hours. Very rarely we have 16 hours, but the maximum now it's going to sound weird. Thanks to COVID, we actually have longer layovers because before we used to have 24 on the West Coast of US. We always have 48 because of the 16
the
hour
long flight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it's more than two, then one day I have a rule. If it's more than one day, you adapt to the time zone because you want to be there and enjoy it. But if it's less than 24 hours, there's no point. You should stay in your home base. So this is how I do. But most of the time I adapt.
It seemed like you were excited when we mentioned your favorite aviation moment. So as a rite of passage on the next trip, all of our guests, we have to verify your credentials. Please tell us what your favorite aviation moment or moments were. That time when you knew that aviation was in your blood?
Yes. The first moment, it was what I've mentioned before when my first flight was in 2012. It was a flight from Romania to Rome because I was extremely excited. I was lucky enough and it was the crew were just boys. So, you know, it's like pretty lady walks in and the boy's like, hey, what you doing? You know, I was really lucky. And then I just went full on. It's like, oh, I'm sitting at 8 Fox. It's right over the wing with the engines. And he goes like, why do you want to see the engine? I'm like, because I love airplanes. I love aviation. And they looked a bit like I was a bit of a creep, which I got used to it, by the way. People still give me the same look now, even though it's been years. And they're like, and then we take off. And then the guy comes in mid-flight and he's like, since you love aviation, do you want to, you know, come to the flight deck? And I'm like, like my heart stopped. And I'm like, and he looks at me, are you still there? Because I sort of like, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm here. And then he's like, because the captain is pretty cool. It's like, and it's like a national airline of Romania, and they're pretty cool with going in flight deck, doing the flight.
What kind of plane is it?
It was a 7-3. And then I'm like, cool. And then I'm going in and my hands are literally like shaking, you know, like I was nervous. And the captain's like, oh, welcome this. And then I was like, I got awkward. Like, you know, when you get that awkwardness moment when somebody says to you, hey, how are you doing, Roxy? It's like, potato. Literally my brain just blacked out. And he's like, are you sure you like aviation? This girl looks like she's like, okay, what's going on here, you know? And because I just graduated from university, because we were talking about my background and stuff, he said, you know what? Let me just chat with my colleague for a second. Just step outside and I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And then he drops the ball. He's like, we're just thinking because you just graduated, we want to give you as a gift. We can sit in the flight deck for landing. And I'm like,
wow.
Nuts. Like, I cried my eyes out. Like, I cried my ass out. I cried like a little girl. Like, and they were uncomfortable. They looked at me and said, are you all right? It's like, no, they're happy tears. And then I am told it. And that's when it broke down. Because I was inside the flight deck after we landed. And then I was crying. And then I told them, it's like, this is the happiest day of my life. You just made me realize that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And then the captain turns to me, he's like, what about when you're going to get married? And I'm like, who cares about marriage, man? This is what real life is, you know? And they both started laughing. And that for me was the moment I know that this is what I want to do for the rest of my
life. Drew, I think very few people in the world have that same story about their first flight.
Yeah, I was probably 5, so I wasn't crying. My eyes were wide open. It's like, what are these amazing things?
I guarantee that I cried in my first flight because I was 6 months old. I guarantee that I was crying.
I think your dad confirmed that. And I was get first class? Thanks, Roxy. What a great story. Let's get some work done covering a couple of news items and hearing more about Dubai. We received this question from a loyal listener and frequent flyer. His name is Steve. Shout out to Steve. Thanks for listening, Steve. He says, hi, Doug and Drew. As the fiance of a flight attendant, I am extremely concerned with the explosion of in-cabin violence that is happening. I hope that you will be discussing the violent assault on an American flight attendant on the JFK to Orange County flight last week and his subsequent arrest on federal charges. We need a national no-fly list. I would love to hear your opinions. Doug, what do we know about this story?
I know very little about it, actually. I remember seeing the news come across on the waves probably 3 or 4 days ago, and I think the flight attendant suffered a broken bone in their face or their nose. I know we talked about the no-fly list, Drew, and who should be on it, who should keep it, how it should happen. 100% violence, I think, should be on the no-fly list. You know, we talked about failure to wear a mask or something like that, whether that should be no-fly list criteria or not. Assault on flight attendants, on crew, on other passengers, 100% there should be a no-fly list for that.
Yeah, and Roxy, I want to hear, being a flight attendant, I want to hear what you think, but we've talked about this before. I really think if it's something like this, which is physical violence, he should be on more than that airline's list, because right now they're banned from that airline.
All right.
Yeah, so if it's something like this, it should be all airlines, maybe even international airlines. Maybe IATA can have a list,
yes,
a no-fly mm-hmm. list. Now, for other incidents where they're not wearing their mask properly, I think for one occurrence, they shouldn't be banned on all airlines. But if it's their second or third, then I think that person needs to be on a national no-fly list for all the airlines.
Yeah.
Roxy, what are your thoughts?
I completely agree with you. I think there are certain things there should be like levels. We have in our company, we have level of threats. So it's level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4. So I think it should apply the same thing to this sort of passengers, because for me, violence is a big no. And I completely agree with this. I think there should be an international list, because if this person did this to this poor flight attendant, what happened to the American, you know, it's terrible. Imagine going to work and coming back with a broken nose. It's terrible. And what's stopping that person from doing it to me on a different side of the world, you know? Because if you're being rude with someone, you're going to be rude with everybody else. So I do believe that, but I actually agree with Dog as well when he said that you shouldn't be banned internationally for not wearing a mask, but you should definitely be banned internationally if you're being violent against, and it's not necessarily with the crew, with mm-hmm. the passengers.
Yeah, with anyone.
Well, because it had happened many times when they just clash with each other and stuff. Yeah, I vote for that. So if somebody wants to make it, I'm going to vote for it. For
yeah, sure. I think the sooner it happens, the quicker all of this will start to decrease. Because yeah. until we have that teeth, if you will, in the punishment, people are just going to keep doing this. And Drew, we've talked about how prices are starting to go up for flights. Flights are starting to get more crowded. As winter weather comes in, more people are going to be stuck in airports as flights cancel and crews are out of place. And you can see how this is going to snowball. And we like the faster we can implement something like this, then hopefully the faster we can start to stop this, which never really happened pre-COVID. This is, yes, there were a few incidents here and there, but the number of incidents that have been happening in the last several months has increased substantially from pre-COVID.
You know, I can agree with you that way, if I may. I actually noticed a change pre-COVID as well, because like pre-COVID was sort of overripe, but after that, it feels like COVID brought like the good in some people, but like the worst yeah. in others, because everybody seems more frustrated. I mean, and when I go to work, I'm like, I mean, we all have our personal life and we have frustrations, and I understand some COVID hit bad some people, and like, you know, some were more blessed than the others. For me, violence and rudeness and no common sense, it's a big mm-hmm. no-no, especially when you work and when you go on a plane full of people. If you want to be rude, then just do a private jet. Just go single. You know. Go private jet. If you want to just be angry and grumpy, just, you know, you can book an airplane to yourself and do whatever you want. But if you want to, you choose to fly commercially, you have to adapt. It's like when you go to the supermarket, you should expect people to be there and you should behave normally. You know, it's just don't expect the supermarket to be open just for yourself. It's a supermarket.
Something about being in an airplane in close proximity, it brings out the best or worst in people.
That's... Yeah. I could not agree more. Yeah.
Yeah. Another quick story. So we have to, this is a real circle back, Doug. We talk about circling back.
It
people
is real.
Think it's a joke, but we do circle back when we say we're going to circle back. This is on the 4G, I'm sorry, the 5G topic we discussed. So this story is from CNET. AT&T and Verizon agree to pause 5G rollout over FAA safety concerns. The FAA warned earlier this week of potential interference issues between aircraft safety devices and 5G service using the new C-band spectrum, which is in the 3.7 to 3.98 gigahertz band for you techies out there. Doug, I think you mentioned that's close to the band that the aircraft use for their...
Yeah, I think aviation starts at 4.0 or 4.1, and you can see where that real close margin could really impact.
AT&T and Verizon confirmed Thursday that they've agreed to temporarily pause rolling out 5G service that uses a new set of radio frequencies. The carriers will work with the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration to address concerns about potential interference between key cockpit safety devices and towers on the ground transmitting 5G signals. The FAA issued a special information bulletin alerting manufacturers, operators, and pilots about the potential interference involving cockpit electronics and 5G. The FAA has said towers on the ground transmitting 5G over the C-band of wireless spectrum could interfere with automated cockpit systems such as those that help planes land in poor weather. CTIA, a wireless industry lobbying group, said that none of the countries using this spectrum for 5G has reported any harmful interference with aviation equipment from these deployments. Roxy, in Dubai, you already have 5G.
We do. It's Dubai is well known for the technologies, like the latest technology they have. And as far as I'm concerned, because I have friends, like I'm friends with the ATC guys, that's actually the manager of the tower, and we discuss aviation topics. And honestly speaking, I've never heard of any issues with that so far. At the same time, I'm pretty excited too, because the Dubai Air Show is coming up, and I actually, this is one of the questions on my list, because there will be a lot of representatives there, and I actually want to actually ask them, it's like, what are their thoughts about the 5G technology and all this, you know, for the ILS approach, and if it actually affects it, because Dubai is very they're very strict on the safety. Aviation is very strict here. You probably heard about that. Even plane spotting is not legal in Dubai. Yeah, it's because they try to keep it very, very safe. So I'm actually going to address that question at the Dubai Air Show. And if I do have anything, I'll let you guys know. But so far, we haven't had any incidents, any reports of whatsoever.
Maybe we could have a double circle back with Roxy after the information.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll be more than happy. Yeah.
Drew, it's funny because, well, actually not funny, but this article about Verizon and AT&T pausing the rollout came out literally a day after we recorded and talked about this interference piece. So we weren't able to get that in last week's episode. But as I was landing in Los Angeles on Thursday morning last week, anyone who's been to LA this time of year in the winter, in the morning, what's there? Fog. You get the marine layer. Drew, I didn't break out of the clouds until about 250 feet above the runway. Now, it wasn't an auto land, but at the same time, I was following the ILS all the way down and broke out less than 20 seconds before I touched down on the runway. And after we landed, I was actually thinking about it because it was the day after we recorded with the 5G. I trust the instrumentation because I've been doing it for the last 10 years, and I know that the ILS will lead me down to the runway just fine. But in my mind, I was thinking about with 5G, with possible interference, and I know that there's this bullet that says there has not been any reported interference, but that's always true until it's not. When it comes to aviation safety, it just takes one incident.
Unfortunately, actually, I was talking to a friend of mine earlier today, and because we were talking about the new technology that the 777X, we're going to cover that topic later as well. And everybody says like, oh no, everything, there's something new. We don't know 100%. It's always like a percentage mm-hmm. there that it might go wrong, you know? So yeah, it's a good question though. It's a good question.
An example that I'll use, Drew, is the 777 was the safest airplane ever produced until it wasn't, right? Mm-hmm. Like Boeing kept saying, because it was introduced in 95, Boeing kept saying there's never been an accident. Nothing has ever happened to the 777. And then you had that British Airways 777 that had the fuel that froze, and they landed short, a mile short of the runway. Luckily, no one perished in that accident. But then it was like, well, wait a minute. Okay, this was the 777, which was the safest airplane ever produced, just had the accident. Then you had that other, I think it was another British Airways that had the engine explode on departure out of Las Vegas. And burned the whole wing off the airplane.
Was it the recent one
was a couple years ago. But then you had the United.
Oh no, I was talking about the 777-200.
Yeah, then in February you had the United 777 that had the engine issue. Going back a couple years, the United 777 landing in Hawaii. So this is where I'm saying, yeah, it's 100% safe until it's not. And as a pilot, trusting the ILS through the weather where I break out and I see the runway 20 seconds before I land, if there is some sort of interference with that and it brings me in sideways or it brings me into a possible obstacle, once something like that happens, then that trust is gone. And then the airlines and the manufacturers and the operators of the aircraft stop trusting the equipment. And this is where we get into what we talked about last week, massive delays and cancellations, where if the weather is below 1,000 feet or below 500 feet and there is confirmed interference, now all of a sudden my flight from San Francisco to LA would have been canceled because I would have had no ability to get in to Los Angeles in that bad weather scenario.
This is Roxy, this is what I asked Doug with these instruments and the visibility issues. You're using your instrument. You should be cross-checking that with another instrument that is not electronic. That is hydraulic, or one of the, you know, the standby attitude indicator. Mm-hmm. Don't you have, so you have that for the attitude, but do you have something else for the altitude to cross check?
You do, but the issue comes down to when you're on an ILS, an ILS is a beam that's driven up from the ground, and it's radio waves, and the airplane is following this beam down to the runway. Unless we're using satellite-based technology or something to back that up, when we're on an ILS, yeah, we have backups for airspeed and altitude and things like that, but we don't have a backup for this beam. There is no backup, and we are trusting, and this is why, and I'm sure other countries have this too, but the FAA has flight testing. Every single instrument approach in the country has to be tested every certain number of months, 12 months, 18 months. I don't know what it is. They actually have King Airs and I think Challengers that they go and they fly these approaches over and over and over again to make sure that it's 100% accurate. So there is no backup to an ILS. We could back it up with a GPS approach or something, but with GPS approaches, we can't get down to the same minimums as we can with an ILS, because there is nothing right now, technologically speaking, there is nothing as precise as an ILS.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think if something did happen, hopefully we don't have to wait till something happens. If we know that there might be a concern, just cross-check the ILS with the GPS. You might not get as low as you want, but if it's tracking 100%, then you know it's working. So there's a cross-check like that. That could be the fix if there's any concern. Roxy, what do you think? I know we're going down a big rabbit hole that we didn't expect.
I completely agree with the, well, Doug knows more than I do. It's like we do have fog in Dubai as well, especially when the seasons cross. So when that's how we know the weather is getting better in Dubai. It's not the 1,000 degrees hot. It's when it gets the fog forecast, because we get on our phones, because we're flight crew. So you get fog forecast, and you actually have Cat 3 approaches as well. And I can't think I'm pretty sure all my colleagues, all my pilots' colleagues will agree with me. If something like Doug said as well, like if something interferes with that ILS, we'll have to divert. There's no way a 380 will ever try, even attempt to land if there's no ILS approach. It's too dangerous.
Well, that was a great discussion. We'll have to circle back with Roxy after the Dubai Air Show. She can be our reporter on the ground. We can check in with her afterwards. We can say, now checking in Dubai with Roxy. Roxy, what do you have for us?
But Roxy, you know, that's really good. Yeah, see what they're saying about this 5G, and if they think
I already noted down. I actually wrote down the question, because I'm making a list with the questions that I want to ask everybody at the because first day of the air show, it's going to be a lot of conferences, and it's open for public. But because we work in the airline industry, we're more than just general public, and I have my book with questions.
All right, good. And well, what do you guys say we get back to some av geeking? Roxy, you've got a lot in common with one of our buddies, Greg, who's at GPLex on Twitter. He loves both the 777 and the GE engines. In fact, Drew, Greg was the one who sent Roxy's Instagram post, which has you swiping left on engines until you got to the 777-9X with the GE9NX engines. Before we get to the engines, let's talk about two aircraft that Roxy's fond of, the 777 and the A380. You have nicknames for both?
I do. I only have nicknames for the planes that I fly. So I don't have nicknames. So whenever I'm going to, the planes that I actually operate on, so not necessarily fly as a passenger. The 380, I call it Fluffy, because everybody calls it fat. And I feel it's disgraceful. So I'm like, and the thing is, people ask me, how did you name the planes? I literally look at it. So I'm like, he's very like a stuffed toy. You know when it's a stuffed toy?
And oh, yeah, like the big plush toys.
He's fluffy, you know? So I'm like, I'm going to call you Fluffy from now on, you know? And then because I feel unfair that the 380 gets a nickname and the 777 doesn't get one. So I look at the 777 one day, I'm like, what am I going to name you? And then it does the pushback. And then when it does the pushback, I'm like, ah, look at this boo-boo. And I'm like, oh, all right, there we go. We got the nickname for boo-boo as well, yeah. And it's Boo Boo and Fluffy. And funny enough, I have two stuffed toys in my bedroom, and they called Fluffy Boo Boo. So it's just, you know what? I'm an aviation geek, but I'm also a girl. So, you know, I have to nickname my airplanes, I guess.
We have nicknames for most of them too, Roxy, so it's not just you. Let's take our av geek hats off and look at the two. Let's look at Boo Boo and Fluffy individually from a business and passenger experience perspective. So let me go through the fact sheet real quick. and we'll see if anything stands out to any of us. So first of all, the 8380-800, 239 feet long. The 777-300ER is 242 feet, so the 777 is a little bit longer. The wingspan on the A380 is amazing, 261 feet. Doug, we talked about airplanes where the wingspan is more wingspan than the length. Is
more, yeah, the A380. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's more than
the length. It's the size of a football pitch, actually.
Yeah.
Crazy big. Let's see, what else did I notice that stood out? Okay, so the thrust per engine on an A3800 is 75,000 pounds times two on each side. So that's about 150,000. On the 777, one of the engines has 115,300. And Roxy, I know you're going to see the 777-9X, but this older version actually has higher thrust.
Leah, I just want to add a few things. So the G9X, it's certified to fly 105, like only 105. But it broke the record for 134,000, you know. And because it's what happens, they broke the record, but they tried to limit it not to reach that amount of power. So although it looks like it's the G9X is more powerful than the G90.
Got it. Yeah. So the G90-115B, that is for Greg, just so he knows how geeky we are. 115,000.
Oh, okay. I just want to add something.
Yep.
G90-115B1A1, if you want to go.
Oh, wait, no, stop. This is okay.
What the is L1 is an extra fuel pump that's put on the G90, actually. It's for the longer range aircraft. So,
it's the 115, the GE90-115 what?
It's B1L1.
B1L1.
We've taken us to another level of that.
I'm sorry, G90 is my favorite engine ever. So it's because when you click on the 777 aircraft, you go in a special section there on the pilot section, and when you click there, it shows the full name of the G90.
All right, wow. Hear that, Greg? That's pretty good. Okay, so
that's for Greg.
The two of you would actually be best friends if we can ever get you guys to meet. You guys could talk all day about the GE90s, and I'll be like, all right, that's enough already. What is the range? I keep forgetting the A380 has an incredible range. 8,100 nautical miles. 777-300, 7,884. Crazy long range.
Do you want to know why? Do you want to know why that is?
Bigger wing.
Bigger wing. More fuel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one last stat, and then actually a couple more. A380, 525 passengers. 777-300, about 365. Now let's talk about fuel burn because everyone's concerned about the environment, right? So the A380 consumes 24,000 pounds of fuel per hour versus 16,500 on the 777-300, which makes it 31% more efficient. But listen to this. If you look at those passenger counts, the A380 has a 43% greater capacity. So it seems to me if they're full passenger-wise, not cargo, the A380 is more efficient per passenger if you have a full flight. All right, let the games begin. So first, let's talk. Just get your spreadsheet out, right? You're in a corner office in a Dubai office building. Which plane do you like better as a corporate officer? And Roxy, you go first.
Ooh, that's the ultimate question when somebody asks. Okay, so do you want me to say as to operate on or as a passenger?
Oh no, we're gonna wait for the passenger part.
Okay.
So I want to know
if you're building an airline.
Oh, okay.
Or if you're at an airline and you're trying to figure out which airplane you wanna go with.
Between the two.
From like in dollars and cents. Since you're in Dubai, a Durham standpoint. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna come back. The second part is gonna be the passenger.
Honestly, I'm probably going to do whatever they did. I'll probably get both, a bit of both. Because what happens is, because you're speaking about the cargo thing. So between the two, the 777-300ER is excellent for cargo. It's what kept the airline going during the pandemic because they did cargo. The 380 is not so great in cargo. Because it's ultra long range. On a very long flight, you need the 380 because it's, like you said, it's the cost per passenger is actually better than the 777. So a bit of both. I'll probably choose a bit of both. Maybe more Boeings than
Okay, both. Doug, what do you say?
Well, economically, and Roxy had mentioned it, and I was going to bring this up, the unit cost. And the unit cost is how much the CASM, cost per available seat mile, which is how much it costs to fly one passenger 1 mile. Because the A380, even though it burns more gas, it burns gas faster, it's more expensive to operate. When you can almost double the passenger count inside that, that's where you get that, as you said, 31% more efficient because of the lower CASM. The issue that you run into is there are only certain airports in the world that are even built to handle the A380. If you guys remember back to when the A380 came out, every single airport in the world was not equipped to handle it. They had to strengthen the runways. They had to build new gates, new jetways. A380s can only go to certain airports in the world. Now, granted, the 777 can't go into small little Cedar Rapids, Iowa, or something like that. You can see where the 777 is able to be utilized in a lot more places. I would probably lean toward the 777 because the A380, if it's full, has a lower CASM. That doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to sell all 600 seats. So you might be running an A380 to Hamburg or to Leipzig, or pick out some city where the airline flies A380s, and it may not be even 50% full. And in a situation like that, the 777 is much more versatile because it the CASM is actually going to be lower in that case if you're not going out with empty seats.
Yeah. All right. So my choice between the two would absolutely be the 777 because, instead of having one big plane from Dubai to Colombo or Dubai to London, you can have multiple frequencies because now you have a smaller plane. So you can offer more to the business customer. Yeah. The 777-300, everyone knows how long it is. The width of the cargo pit is about the same. So you can fit two of those LD3 containers across the cargo pit, right? And it's the same on the A380, same on the 777. The 777 has about 40 positions for those containers. So you can take an immense amount of cargo. You can take much more cargo than the A380.
Mm-hmm. And just to add to that, the 777 can be modified to carry cargo in a cabin. The 380 cannot be modified.
Yep. And we know your airline actually flew some flights where I saw them taking boxes into the cabin.
I flew one of those.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes.
So are you giving the boxes a safety briefing? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, we do manual demonstrations. We just show them. You know what? They were the best behaving passengers I've ever seen in my life.
Now let's circle back to the passenger experience. Mm-hmm. Roxy, from these two, and you can even describe how it is working both. How is it from a human perspective for both? Like, which one do you prefer?
From working point of view, I prefer 100%. I prefer the 777.
Really?
Really?
First of all, it's very subjective. It's less people, so we get at the same time, it's the crew distribution as well, because the 380 has double decker, so there's two decks. The crew divided differently. There's and especially on long flights when they take rests, there's not enough amount of crew to handle the whole cabin. It's more tiring, the workload is higher from the passenger point of view. If I had to choose to fly without being objective, because I'm a big fan of a few things, and everybody says the same, even our Boeing pilots. So even our Boeing pilots said they love to fly as passengers in a 380. It's spacious, it's comfortable, it's because of the wing, it has a huge wing. And it flies higher, which means it's more comfortable. There's less turbulence. It's very comfortable, very quiet as well. So definitely from the customer. And that's, I got that feedback from the passengers as well. Everybody loves to fly as passenger on a 380. Everybody loves it.
Wow.
It's like a flying apartment. It's very comfortable, very quiet, and you get the shower, of course, if you fly certain companies. You get the shower, you get the lounge, and it's more comfortable. You don't have that on 777, so.
Yeah. Doug?
Well, I've never flown on a 380, but I would probably have to go with the 380 just because of the space. And Drew, you and I talk about the A321 XLR versus any wide body, and we go with the wide body because of the space.
Yeah.
The 380 is basically double the floor space of a 777-300. So hands down, from a passenger perspective. Yeah.
It's very simple for me. the bar. Roxy, I was on a flight. It was your airline, and it was from Sydney to Christchurch, which is about a 4-hour flight.
Yeah.
So we got business class, and I was at the bar probably for 3 hours of that 4-hour flight.
And you should have sat there for landing.
If I could, I would. If it had a seatbelt, I would. And the best thing is, I mean, it's not just the airplane. I was able to mingle with the other passengers and see where they were going and talk to one of the flight attendants who was also from Sri Lanka. He was the purser. And it was like a fabulous time. It was just so luxurious. I felt like, you know, you see those pictures. We're all too young to remember this, but when the 747s used to have a bar on the upper deck and, you know,
the piano.
Yeah, so absolutely the A380 for me. Now to our other AvGeek topic, engines, specifically the GE9X engine, which powered the GE777-9X and the 777-8X when it's launched. Just a quick fact sheet on the GE9X engine. It has the largest fan ever, and it reduces the blade count to only 16 blades. This is the least among twin-engine aircraft. The engine has a 27-to-1 compressor ratio, leading to an overall engine pressure ratio of 60-to-1, which is the highest in aviation history. It also has the lowest noise level of any GE engine. So, Doug, you know, we talk about how quiet the 787 is. This is going to be quieter, if that's even possible.
Yeah.
It has the lowest nitrogen oxide emissions from a GE engine.
I just want to add a few things with the GE9X. Once the 777X is going to be launched, it's going to be the most efficient twin engine aircraft out there.
Yes.
Most fuel efficient. Also, the GE9X is especially designed. GE made sure that GE9X and the GE9X are actually designed to it's part of a program that they try to do with the legs to make it more environmental friendly. Okay. And it's also a project that's Etihad is doing currently right now. It's called the Green Liner, and it has the GE9X, and it's specialized with this. Regarding the noise reduction, it used to, if you guys remember when initially the 777X was launched initially with that burgundy beautiful livery, it used to have a chevron nozzle similar to the 7-8, but it disappeared. And everybody was like, well, what just happened? And when I actually digged into it, because I sort of like that feature, they said that the GE9X is so well designed for noise reduction, it but didn't need the extra cost for that. Because
it's interesting.
Yeah. So because basically, apparently, people don't think this, but only that chevron cowling of the engine, it costs a lot of money. So they thought, we don't need that because the engine's already quiet.
Just to explain, so what you're talking about is if you look at a 787 engine, on the end of the engine cowling, you have this serrated edge, which are also known as chevrons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're saying the GE9X does not need that because it does add a little bit of drag.
It's already quiet enough.
It's quiet enough. Because that's the purpose of the chevron nozzle for the engine cowling is to reduce the noise. That was the main thing. It's designed by NASA, I think, or something like that. So the engineer is doing that. And then when they released the GE9X, they're like, okay, it's quiet. We don't need that extra. Because why would you? Because whenever you try to sell an airplane, you try to make it decent, you know, because it is going to be too expensive for your customers to buy it. So and it fulfills all the needs that the company needs at the moment. So, but I'm excited because I'm going to get very close to it soon. So I'm super excited.
Well, you're going to the Dubai Air Show. We mentioned that it starts in less than a week. It starts in what, 4 days, 3 days, I think. So you've got, as we talked about, you're going to be our on the ground reporter, but I think that you've got some GE things that you're going to be doing there.
Yeah. That's very exciting that I want to reveal with you guys for the first time, like out there. GE Aviation has what we spoke about, and they actually want me to take over their Instagram and take it to Dubai Air Show. So if you watch the GE stories, you would probably see me in them a lot, because I don't know, there's a thing. I love that company. I love their engines, and it seems like the love is mutual since they asked to do that. It's gonna be like, I'm extremely excited. It's gonna be a privilege for me to be able to represent such a huge company. It's a massive privilege for me. And I can't wait. I'll be covering the GE9X, the GNX, of course, the GE90, and the 777X. That's the coverage from the GE side of the the aviation. But from the my side, everything from the air show. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's gonna be awesome. So everyone, go check out her Instagram, see the photos she's gonna post. But I'm jealous, Roxy, because I'm certified in two airplanes, both of which use GE engines, and I've been flying GE engines for the last 10 years. So I'm excited about this too, because I'm not quite the same nerd level as you are and as Greg when it comes to engines, but I'm definitely a big GE engine fan.
You still have time to hop on a plane and join us.
Yeah, we can. Wish. Oh my goodness. Yeah, November 14th.
No, I'll probably end up in Maui again.
Well, let's get sad again for Doug.
Guys, let's head back to this country for just a moment. We got an awesome review, Doug, from a new listener. His name is Patrick in San Francisco. He said, just stumbled across your podcast, and oh man, I got a lot to catch up on. Really enjoyed the mix of plane spotting geekery and pilot/operations talk. And please, you're killing me with the San Fran. So even he's saying, stop saying San Fran.
Stop saying San Fran.
They hate that, Roxy, apparently. Okay. Was exciting to hear about Doug's first 737 flight and the butter he spread on the last landing of the trip.
I greased it on.
You greased it.
Yeah, so I spread that butter.
Also, was living vicariously through you on your recent cross-country flights to New York City. I did have one question for you both. Do you guys have any concerns on potential COVID exposure and flying? I would love to jump on a real flight soon to kick in some miles, but a part of me is a little hesitant. Anyways, keep up the great work. Who knows, maybe bump into you guys one of these days. Patrick, thank you for the feedback and the question, which all three of us will have opinions about. Roxy, how would you answer Patrick's question about his concerns about flying and COVID-19?
Well, in my opinion, I will tell Patrick to just go book that ticket and just go. Because the studies that there's a lot of studies proven that you have actually less chances of catching COVID on an airplane than on ground. For many reasons. First of all, masks are mandatory in the aircraft. They're not mandatory on ground. So you can't tell a person that you pass in the supermarket, oh, can you put your mask on? So most of the people wear their mask except for when they're eating. At the same time, most of the airlines nowadays require for people to get vaccinated or get it tested. The crew, I might be wrong on this one, but I think almost all the airline crew, they are vaccinated. I know if you're vaccinated, you can still catch COVID, but it would not create damage for you, and it will go away from your system more faster than if you're actually not vaccinated. But the tests are mandatory to fly. So if you hop, so for Patrick, if Patrick is listening, so Patrick, think it this way. Would you rather go on an airplane where you know that everybody's tested negative for sure because they are obligated to be tested? Or would you rather go to a club where test is not mandatory and the guy sitting next to you at the bar might just sneeze cheeky and you just catch it? So my answer is this.
Oh my goodness, those are such good points. Yeah, I didn't even think of some of those. I'll go next, Doug. You and I actually we researched this early on in the crisis, and Roxy, they found that flight attendants have less of an occurrence of COVID-19 than the general public. Even though they're with all these people, the planes are very clean, cleaner than they used to be now because we're more cautious. And just like you said, anywhere else, people aren't wearing a mask. I mean, on the plane, they're wearing a mask unless they're eating. So it's most of the time.
Yeah.
I think, Patrick, just be safe, wear a mask, get vaccinated, and fly wherever you want. It's very safe. Doug and I have been flying a lot since COVID, and neither of us have gotten COVID.
I just looked. I've done over 150 flights since the start of the pandemic. Our house has had COVID, and it came from my daughter's daycare. Yeah. It wasn't from one of my flights that I did. It wasn't from that. It was my daughter brought it home from daycare. So that shows right there. Yes, it's safe. Patrick, once you're comfortable, get out and fly. Just do it. The safety precautions that the airlines are following is, as Drew said, better than it was even pre-COVID. And Drew, you and I have talked about this on several occasions about how there are going to be good changes that come from COVID. And one of those is the cleanliness and health aspect of flying.
Yep.
Including, and I know we had this debate, whether change fees are gone for good or whether they're going to come back. But right now, if you have a flight booked and you're sick or you don't feel healthy, you can change your flight and you're not going to pay for that. Yeah. And that hopefully will that's be hopefully something that, stay. That'll stay. Yeah.
I don't think it will, but
yeah. We know that we're going to circle back to that. Roxy, we could easily AvGeek with you for another 2 hours, but it might be too much for our listeners. Let's finish up by letting you tell our listeners what they should do if they visit your city, Dubai. Drew and I talk about how a major airline has a travel segment called Three Perfect Days where they review a destination. Our airline schedules don't give us much time, so can you give us recommendations for 2 days in Dubai?
Righty, 2 days in Dubai. Well, you can cover a lot of things. But the most important thing that I actually want to cover about Dubai, because I have spoken with every time I go to US, I'm a social person, so I talk with people that have never been to Dubai, And a lot of people believe that Dubai is strict, there's regulation. Yes, of course, it is a Muslim country. They have mosques, they have their own traditions. But as Drew said at the beginning, more than 80% of them, they're expats. So there's only common sense rules. Common sense, what it means, if you wear shorts and a crop top, you're not going to go to see the sheikh, you know? I think that is common sense rules that should apply in any country. So basically, people that want to come and visit Dubai, just to let you know, whoever's listening, you can wear shorts, you wear swimsuits on a beach, you don't go full on dress, whatever. There's swimsuits on a beach. There's alcohol. You can drink alcohol. It's not a dry country. There's a lot of party going on. If I had to summarize Dubai I can compare Dubai with a destination in US. You would not believe this, but Dubai is like Las Vegas of the.
I thought you were going to say that. Okay.
Yeah. It's because it's fun and there's a lot of things you can do. So if you do come to Dubai, you have to cover the Burj Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world. We have the tallest wheel, like the London Eye. It's way taller than the London Eye. Now you can do it and have an amazing view. We get the Palm, you get you get beach. You can do anything. In Dubai, literally, we even have a ski slope. So you can
Skied there. I've done that. Yeah.
Because people say like you can't get bored in Dubai. You go, you have desert, you have, yes, you do have a ski slope, but it's indoors. And now, just recently, whoever is a fan of diving, they just opened the deepest pool in the world that you can go dive in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. And in 2 days, I think you can cover that. You just need to know the right people. Whoever wants to come to Dubai, give me a shout and I'll be more than happy to guide them through exactly where to go and what to pick. It's amazing. And people should stop comparing the United Arab Emirates with Saudi Arabia or any other countries that are strict and have a lot of rules.
Yeah, I've been to Dubai quite a bit and I love it. Always have a great time there. Go to Atlantis. You can go see the fountains. Yeah. You mentioned it's like Vegas. They have the same fountains designed by the same person as you have at the Bellagio. So lots to do there. Thank you so much, Roxy, for joining us. It was a lot of fun. Do you have anything else to share with our listeners or how they can find you?
What I can say is it's been a massive privilege for me to catch up with both of you and to be able to speak up with the world. Whoever wants it can find me, as you mentioned at the beginning, it's RoxAvGeek on Instagram. And as I said, if somebody wants to visit Dubai or wants to go all AvGeeky and non-AvGeeky stuff, you can always message me. I'm very friendly. I don't bite. I don't bite. I only bite when I'm hungry.
or when the passengers are acting up on the airplane.
Oh, I wish I could do that, but I can't.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this amazing privilege.
Definitely. I think we have an invitation, Doug.
I think so. Yeah.
That is an invitation. Oh, and also because the expo is happening, I really encourage you to visit now because it's amazing.
Thank you, Roxy. Great meeting you. And let's meet up if you're ever flying Boo Boo or Fluffy to Washington. Be sure to check out this week's episode post at www.nexttripnetwork.com with links to Roxy's blog and Instagram. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Next Trip Podcast. Please let your friends know about us so that we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
Thanks to all of our listeners for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. that will help other listeners like you discover this show.